Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Joining us now is filmmaker and our guest today. I was going to say something else, but I didn't. So we've got Sean Reck. Thank you for being here, Sean.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Wow. So Making a Murder comes back. So now you've been working on your own film, and I have to mention it's called Convicting a Murderer. And what's the purpose of that? Like, what were you trying to do when you were putting that together?
Well, what the long and short of it is, I watched Making a Murderer season one, and I was really interested and really entertained. And it was, you know, it was good for filmmakers like me who do true crime, and it broke new ground, and I was excited by it, and I watched it and was moved. And then I started doing some studying and learned that in many ways I, as a viewer, was misled. And they left a lot of information on the table. They also steered people the wrong way in several instances. Yeah, in as much as, you know, they don't consider themselves journalists, but this was advocacy journalism without the transparency and with some really unethical strands in which they went when they told this story. So I always waited for someone to come correct the record. After a couple of years, it didn't appear anybody was going to do it. And I said, well, we're up for the challenge. And that's why we set out to kind of make a more complete version of this story.
And that's really kind of it's frustrating for me, because I look at this as I watched it as well. And I came away thinking, yeah, they're, you know, probably did it and or didn't do it, and they were framed, and the cops were in it, and they make it look really, really bad. But, you know, when you interview people like Ken Kratz and stuff like that, you realize that there's more evidence, and things have been changed on the film or the series to make it look one way when it was another, and that's not so. That's no longer a documentary. It's no longer journalism.
No, it's kind of like. It's kind of like the old show back in the 80s that no one will remember called Not Necessarily the News.
I remember that.
Yeah, just take those sound bites and have Ronald Reagan saying that his, you know, pants were on fire and that he wanted jelly beans, you know. some of the editing is that bad. And they won an Emmy for editing, creative editing.
Yeah, well, it was creative. But when you do that, you see, for me, it's too Alex Jonesy. I mean, as soon as you do that, you've created fake evidence in a sense. You've created a narrative that's not real. So how can we trust anything in the whole series?
And the weird thing is they're not asking you to trust them, because once they were confronted with, just the beginnings of what people found out as far as their editing and their storytelling, they said, hey, whoa, we're not journalists. We created entertainment, and everybody is wildly entertained. This is, 40 million people watch this thing. It turned Netflix around a little bit. They were kind of stagnant. And they began to grow again, and it had a profound effect. Well, guess what? It also had a profound effect on the lives of these guys you painted as crooked cops and crooked prosecutors who set out to bury these poor guys. They did a lot of things that were that affected people. They left me with the impression that the Averys were poor. Mm-hmm. That's not true. They left me with the impression that Manitowoc was a bleak, kind of like sad town, kind of like an Ozarky, meth paradise type of place. It's just the picture you paint for yourself, and that's not true at all. It's a beautiful town. And there's just like item after item. There's so much that we literally have meetings now deciding what to include and what not to include. Because we don't want to overwhelm people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what's really irritating is I've had Ken Kratz and prosecutor from that county. I've had quite a few, and we just interviewed Ken Kratz 2 days ago, and he's gonna it'll be on next week's show. We actually have to buffer it because we'll get thousands of really nasty. Hate mails, so to speak, and I don't know how we're going to overcome that. How are we going to make people realize they're not even going to listen to what Ken says? They're just going to call him a lot of names.
Yeah, with Ken, we've got an internal saying: even when he wins, he loses.
Yeah,
because we thought that the pace, especially of Making Murder 2, was a bit slow. Watching Grandpa eat lettuce for 30 seconds maybe was a little too art house.
Yeah.
And we were going to go with a faster pace. So one of the things we wanted to do to go with a faster pace was these people who just salivate and say, man, if I could just get at that guy, we're connecting them with the guy. We're putting them in a room and letting them go at him. And have these kind of like debates and discussions. So we had a guy come in and we got a courthouse, a courtroom. And, the guy made some points and Kratz made some points. But Kratz, even when he was right, he just sometimes does it in a way that leaves people sort of disliking him. Like, of course I'm right, you jerk.
Yeah. Well, no, that's true. It's true. I've told him that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because he's so frustrated. He's just past the limit of being nice, because his son's life has been threatened 100 times, and his wife's been insulted 1,000, 10,000 times, whatever. I've got I think 37 CDs, audio CDs of threats, death threats. Made to people in this case.
Oh my God.
We're gonna weave in every now and then just for flavor.
Just for flavor.
add some texture. And like I said, that's better than Paul chewing lettuce.
Yeah.
And just the fact that these people all over the world got so enmeshed in this case is amazing to me. Another fascinating thing to me is that, when we're going to tell everybody, oh, the blood vial was BS and this, Steven really did kill this cat and he didn't just steal a cheese sandwich. He really tore up this business and some of these other things. Part of the wrongful conviction time was for a legitimate kidnapping where he pointed a gun at a child. We're going to tell them all that stuff. But the funny thing is the hardcore truthers, like on Reddit and Twitter, they already know this. They've moved way beyond anything they saw in Making a Murderer. And I said this in the press in another interview a couple weeks ago, and I checked on Twitter, and of course, they're like, of course we moved on. You know, that's old news, because this is their life. This is, they mean, like, every... I mean, they've really got their finger on the pulse of this case, and they've got new theories all the time. And so it's just... The funny thing is, Making a Murderer started all this, but they know that most of what they saw is horse crap. So, but they're still, you know, they just... It launched this rocket. You know, I don't... I'm giving you too many metaphors here. Once that train, once that train left the station, no one was going to be able to hit the brakes. It's just a, like a social phenomenon.
Well, it's harder to unconvince people of something than it is to convince them. So I think a lot of people are trapped in that because that's the first place they went, the first thing they heard.
Yeah, so we thought something that would be useful is interviewing a few people who did unconvince themselves. And, you know, converts.
Yeah.
And, you know, to some of these folks, these are like, this would be like joining the Communist Party in the 60s. You know, to say, wait a minute, I was wrong about the cops or whatever. So we have them explaining their thought process and how they, you know, what raised the red flags. And that doesn't mean we necessarily agree with them. That doesn't mean we think Stephen Avery should stay in prison. I sure don't think Brendan Dassey should stay in prison. I can tell you that no matter what happened. And but, you know, we are just part of what we're kind of using to show people this whole phenomenon that took place.
Now, do you think that Brendan Dassey should be out of prison because he actually had nothing to do with it? Or do you think that maybe he was involved, but he was like mentally incapable of handling himself? He was, you know, prosecuted badly. You know, that interrogation was kind of rough on him. And he was alone throughout the interrogations and things like that. Do you think that's the issue?
I think my issue is that he's mentally incapable of initiating anything like this, in my opinion. If he was involved, he was a follower. He was taking or he was subordinate to his uncle, if this happened that way. And he's done enough time. He's not going to get out and go stalk and kill anybody. He's going to go fishing and play video games and go to WrestleMania. You know, I don't think society has anything to worry about with the release of Brendan Dassey. And, you know, I'll tell you one chilling thing. You know, we interviewed Len Kaczynski.
Right.
Who, interestingly enough, I didn't realize from Making a Murderer, he's a judge. Well, he's an inmate now. But he's a judge, and he was also a lieutenant colonel, and he was a military prosecutor. But he's an inmate. He was put in jail the other day over some allegations. But I interviewed him, and I said, you know, do you feel bad for Brendan, and do you feel like you? I mean, do you wish he were out now? And he looked in the camera, and he said, not particularly. And I was like, holy moly, man, this is your chance to save a little face. And he's just so dry and I guess clinical about the whole thing. He's like, nah.
Well, he's probably safer, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just doesn't, it's like he's ambivalent, like totally indifferent. So did he ever, there's somebody who with no empathy. Yeah. You know, so that to me is sad that he had, at least for a short time, he had an attorney who really didn't have much empathy for him.
Yeah.
And made that terrible mistake of leaving him with that
wannabe
cop investigator, you know.
Well, I think that ruined his reputation. I mean, but that part of it's all true, right?
Yeah, sure it is.
Yeah, yeah. So that was...
Now, Brendan admitted things before that interview.
Yeah.
And he came up with things. I mean, he was, you could say he was led because that's the Reed method. And then, you know, they suggest somewhat during interviewing, but he came up with things without being led.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so people have to take that into consideration. But whatever happens, this is enough time for him.
And Sergeant Colburn, that was another person that was vilified. What can you say about him?
Well, what people don't realize, yes, he was a witness in the wrongful conviction case because he took a phone call when he was a corrections officer, before he was really a full-fledged cop. He took a call where somebody said, "I think you got the wrong guy," and he forwarded the call to the detective bureau. And when he heard about Avery being found innocent or being exonerated, he volunteered that information. "Hey, I took this call." So in a sense, he was a witness for Avery. You know, him on his own coming forward would help Avery's case. And everybody acts like, oh, he was on the hook. He was going to lose millions in this lawsuit. And of course he planted a key. Well, no. He believes Stephen Avery is innocent of the Berenstain rape. And he was fascinated that the DNA could exonerate him. He thought there was a whole new era coming that was going to make crime, you know, easier to fight, just DNA. And, you know, he just didn't have any vested interest in burying Stephen Avery. And then the way they portrayed him as being involved in the old case, it was a real mischaracterization.
Now, what are some of the other egregious misrepresentations you could cite in the documentary for people who may not be familiar with the truth about the case?
Well, I can just tell you that we're going to show actual footage of some depositions and some courtroom scenes, and that we're going to show Making a Murderer One's edit. And it's going to, I believe it's going to make viewers' blood boil, because it's not an accident. It's not for the sake of entertainment. It is a deliberate misleading direction that they took with people. And I was angry when I saw some of this stuff, and I think a lot of viewers will be too.
What do you think the reason is for that? Like, when you say it's deliberately misleading, which I agree, was it because they wanted to take down cops? What was their motive?
I think the cops were, damage on the periphery, collateral damage. They wanted to get their guy out. We have prison recordings of them talking to him, saying, "Look, we want this to help, and hang in there, buddy." They came and left every day with the family. They're embedded with the family. You know, they picked sides. It's okay. I picked sides too. Mm-hmm. But you have to be transparent about it, and you have to be fair. And they were neither. They were not transparent as far as their advocacy, and they weren't fair, and I'm going to go as far as to say they weren't honest.
Yeah. And it's really disappointing, because it's going to change people's perspective of when they watch a documentary, and it's going to be so easy to see something in the future that's a documentary and say, "Oh yeah, it's probably lies, or it's lies, or it's fake news," you know, that old thing. Because
right.
look, Making a Murderer did it. You know what I mean? It's kind of
and it was one of the biggest documentaries ever on crime. There was The Jinx and Making a Murderer. The Jinx was honest.
Yeah,
Making a Murderer was not honest. Okay, those are the two biggest true crime docs. Half of this is about the case, and half of it, we've got to correct the record, and we've got to make some ground rules, because I see myself, and this probably sounds haughty, but I see us as the new long form deep dive journalists. Young people want visual news. They want to hear it, or they want to see it, okay? And they want authenticity. And, newspapers and magazines, besides the fact that they're dying, they aren't spending the money on real journalism anyway. They're letting all their good people go because they cost money. And then when you go to the networks, all they're doing is choir preaching. You know, it's all, Trump all day, or you know, loving him or hating him or whatever, that gets their numbers and sells their ad spots. So there's a gap. And we have this opportunity to become the journalists, to fill in this gap. And when one of the biggest, most important documentaries pulls the crap that they pulled, we have to correct the record. It's probably going to bore some people. And, you know, who made us arbiters of, you know, of what's honest? Well, we're just saying they should have held the journalistic standards. Mm-hmm. And they should have just, or at least disclosed certain things and not lied. And you know, that's why the record has to be corrected. Just as documentary nerds, we really feel the need to do this.
Well, who's going to regulate this or just describe what should be done? Because this isn't the first one. You know, when I was doing interviews for that Soaked in Bleach with the Kurt Cobain, you know, death, and then they did the same thing. They actually edited it, faked different answers. They totally changed that whole thing. And even when we interviewed people that were used on the film, they said, well, that isn't what I said. This isn't what I did. So it's not the first one to do it. Making a murderer is just kind of the most prominent one. How are we going to get that, rein that, and put that in line? Because there's a lot of money to be made by promoting a conspiracy.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, Oliver Stone, you know, even with scripted features, you can do it. I think that it's going to be up to the audience. I think they want authenticity, and I think that... you know, there's still people out there who can vouch for the credibility of what you're doing or say, hold on. I mean, when Making a Murderer came out, the New Yorker, 2 weeks later, had a long-form article saying, hold on, before you make fools of yourselves, you need to know this about Making a Murderer and about murder of Theresa Halbach. You know, they came out with this piece, but guess what? You know, not that many people around the world, unfortunately, read the New Yorker.
Yeah.
I read the piece. That's what started me on my path of like, wait a minute. There was never anything to the blood. That was almost a whole episode, you know? And the thing ended and I'm like wondering why the blood wasn't in court. And it's because it was a non-issue and they knew it was a non-issue, but they left it in. The arbiters and the people who decide what's legit and what's not are going to be the public. And I think, hopefully, a lot of eyeballs get on what we're doing because we're going to make them more cynical.
And all of this begs a question I just have to ask you. The changes in the, you know, editing people's statements and leaving out important information, selective omission and all that, doesn't that indicate that the people who made the documentary are aware of the problem that you're talking about? They know what they're doing, right?
In my opinion, yes. Now, Andy Colburn, whose courtroom testimony was changed in Making a Murderer, filed suit. I don't know if this suit's going to survive. There are a lot of procedural reasons it may or may not. But if he has his day in court, they're going to show an edit where they ask him a question, a very important question, and a Making a Murderer viewer saw him say yes. But he never said yes. He never answered the question. Mm-hmm. They took the yes from a different question. That's like, that's not a mistake. That's not entertainment. That's,
well, yeah.
That's just egregious.
And speaking about losers, but Joseph Evans Jr. Now, I just roll my eyes because I think it's laid out just way too obvious. First of all, the guy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Says one thing, you know, he gets a confession from Avery in prison about how he murdered Halbach, and then all of a sudden there's a reward, and then the man's writing a letter saying, I did it, and here's my deposit slip.
Man, I'm going to tell you, I did press for 2.5 weeks on that, okay? You know, all kinds of stuff. Fox, you know, Access Hollywood, all these TV shows. Yeah. I'm going to tell you something I didn't tell anybody. He sent that letter, and the letter had all this supplemental information. And we were trying to fact check the letter. And part of it was, Stephen had a bag that had some stuff in it that he ran and buried, okay? That kind of came out. I don't know if it was directly in the letter, but it was something that we were investigating. And then we also know that the detectives up north in Marinette County saw a bag when they first questioned him, never checked it, and then next time they pulled over that vehicle, the bag was gone. So we're like, okay, if we're going to have any breakthroughs, we probably have to look for that bag. And we thought of a few logical places he could have buried it. We had professional metal detectors, evidence techs. We spent thousands and thousands of dollars looking for potential stuff. We were about to get ground penetrating radar, all right, and pull it through the woods in the areas where this stuff may have been buried, just to find it or not find it or whatever. We did all this crap based on this clown's letter. And there were some other things in it that I just thought told us that maybe the letter wasn't legit. But we had to check it out. We're trying to be really thorough. And so the reason for the call was for me to say, you know, Stephen Avery told you couldn't talk about the case anymore because Netflix was making a documentary. And I was going to say to him, look, Netflix wasn't making a documentary. They acquired this years later. Mm-hmm. A couple of young filmmakers were making a documentary. So why did you say that? That's an example of something being informed by hindsight, which tells me this whole damn thing, this whole letter may be informed by hindsight. So I had this whole case ready to go against him. I start the call. And he's like, let me tell you what happened here. You know, I was in the area. He lived in Michigan. He was in the area, went to the Avery salvage yard to buy a window, hit Teresa with his car, her head hit a rock. He panicked because he was on so many drugs. And he decided to frame the homeowner, who didn't know who it was. And he goes, like, through every little point trying to show that he framed Stephen Avery, and of course his motive, now we know, was he was trying to get his wife that $100,000 reward. His girlfriend killed his wife. His girlfriend now on the outside. He was trying to get her $100,000, you know, toward a house or whatever. And it was just the most lame brain thing. But you've got to take it seriously because, I mean, we had to report it because he's a killer. He was free when Teresa was killed, and he's there in the area. So it's worth, you know, a little bit of follow up. So we just told Newsweek about it, and of course everybody went crazy. But I was, you know, I was upset because we wasted a lot of money. Thinking, well, maybe there's something to this letter. We'll try to back it up with something. And here, you know, there was, and he admits that the letter's total BS. Like, you know, at the beginning of that call. So, like, who would believe him anyway? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. You know, people will jump on it and take it somewhere that it probably never deserved to be. So, what do you?
It shines some light on our project, but I put it out just to get it out there and make it a beat in our story. We weren't going to make it a big thing, and still won't, you know, but...
But it's important. Whatever. It's an important aspect to show that, you know, all the crap that's going on around the case and the people trying to, I don't know, make money off of it or make fame, and how much BS came out and things that people don't know, but they hear these stories on the internet and believe. So it's an important project to put out that, this is what the facts are, you know?
Right.
So one thing that I have never really resolved in my mind is why Kratz convicted both Dassey and Avery on different sort of timelines of the murder of Hellbeck. So I'm sort of confused, you know, if that was just a... Because he won't really get into that. And I don't know why. Do you think it's because he just wanted to get them both convicted and it didn't matter if he kind of altered the stories on both?
Yeah, we confront him with that since he sat for interviews. And... I think he made an effort to answer the question.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that, that's one of the tougher ones to deal with.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that they weren't guilty. I'm just wondering if this is a common tool that prosecutors use to make sure they get people convicted. Because if he had tried to prosecute them both at the same trial, it wouldn't have worked.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean that you may be right. I mean, you're probably right.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what he said because there's so much information related to this, you know, to the project compared to our typical, you know, film. This is like 10 finished hours. You know, when it's all said and done, I think he said they got a better understanding of some things, and his answer will be in the docuseries.
Yeah, and that's something for people to look for.
Yeah.
So now, what is it that you want people to get out of this? What is that, you know, at the end of the day, your project, your docuseries gets out there and people watch it. What is it that you want them to walk away with?
I want them to walk away with a full understanding of what happened. I want them to walk away with a law enforcement perspective because those guys didn't cooperate with making a murderer. And partially because they were still working, and now, you know, we got a little lucky that they retired. And we want people to not take reporting at face value. So they've really, until people reporting have really earned their trust. You just can't always accept it at face value. We want people to be skeptical.
And what it comes down to also is that if Stephen Avery actually is innocent and he was framed, they should be able to make that case with the truth, right?
Absolutely. And if we This is what I told when at the beginning of this thing, when I got the law enforcement guys to agree to be interviewed, I said, if we find some evidence that you guys did wrong, I said, we will march the guy out with his attorneys. We'll run to them with the evidence. Like we ran to them with the ovens thing. You know, whether they mock it or not, you know. We're not gonna withhold something that could be that relevant. Just do it fair and square. And I think it'll help to hear from these law enforcement guys too, you know, on some of these issues that people bring up.
When is your planned date for release?
You know, we're making it on spec. So, meaning we'll be done in March, and then we're going to show it to all the streamers. Some have reached out already. Of course, you know, people want... Netflix has 40 million fans of this thing. Mm-hmm. So they want 40 million people to sign up for their service and try it out for free. And maybe this is the magnet or whatever. But I'd love it if this were on Netflix, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But we've got to choose the home for this. Netflix, you know, has purchased everything else we made crime-wise. It would make sense. But anyway, I mean, they trust our work.
Yeah.
But who knows? It'll end up somewhere. Probably, and I'm sure we'd have a deal done by June, and then it's totally up to them when they want to run it.
Yeah. Now, yeah, and I want to mention that. Now, you've got a couple of other features that you've done that are quite good. Your White Boy was a pretty amazing documentary, and they actually made a movie of it as well. How did you get involved in that story?
I just thought it was a fascinating story, and wanted to tell the story. Got access to Rick himself, the subject. They were doing the Hollywood thing simultaneously, and we actually cooperated with each other really well. It was just surreal having the screenwriter Scott Silver giving us notes, and this is the guy who wrote Joker. He's sitting there telling us how to make the story better. Maybe that's why people like it so much. We got so much professional help, like big time Hollywood help in shaping the story. But everybody loves that film. It's a nice, pretty simple film about an over sentencing and political payback that you can see right now on Stars. Netflix just bought a license too, so it's actually going to end up on Netflix soon. Well, or at some point, like in the next year and a half, and it's going to be on Netflix worldwide also. And then the other film we did that's a little more complicated, but it was our first wrongful conviction, was A Murder in the Park, and that's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And that's a crazy double wrongful conviction, meaning a guy was wrongfully convicted, and to get him out, they wrongfully convicted somebody else. It's an insane story. And it ended up, becoming a lawsuit and everything, and, changed the way they look at these cases a little bit in Illinois. And it was the case, the original case was the case that ended the death penalty in Illinois. So it was really, really important, powerful stuff. And then we've got some other things. We're always like trying to correct narratives, and we've even got a film out that questions what America has done to the gospel. That's called American Gospel, AmericanGospelFilm.com. It's on every platform, and that film even approaches how American churches, a lot of them, have distorted the gospel and how we're exporting that distorted gospel abroad. So we try to be like people who correct the record, you know, no matter how high stakes the subject matter, you know. So
that's really important.
Yeah, we think so.
I think, and so what, now do you have a website or a place that people can go and find out information about the movies you make?
Yeah, transitionstudios.com. We, forgive us, it's a sparse website. We're working on it now, but there are some trailers and teasers for a few of our films. And then all of our projects have pretty robust Facebook pages. Convicting a Murderer on Facebook, A Murder in the Park on Facebook, White Boy on Facebook. They all, you know, people can sit there and debate and
scream at each other.
Yeah, that's what they do. Is there, you know, it's pretty polarizing stuff. There's no doubt about it. I made when we announced this project, just on the name, I gave it this working title, Convicting a Murderer. I don't know what it's going to end up being called. Just on the name, I swear to God, I had about 1,000 enemies in 16 minutes after this project was announced, you know, on the title alone. I should have thought that. I should have written, you know, Untitled Teresa Halbach Project. You know, I shouldn't have just, like, come up with something catchy. That's probably a mistake.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have that all the time. You know, the love-hate relationship with the listeners, you know. But
yep.
You know, they keep coming back, no matter what I call them.
Yeah, that's what we have. We have these, you know, people like, boycott this project. I will never watch this thing. It's an infomercial for the cops, which couldn't be further from the truth. And then, you know, the other day, a few people said, who are we kidding? We're going to watch every minute of this thing, and we're at least going to tear it apart. Yeah. You know, which is, I think, is an honest assessment.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Hey, now, what's your opinion of Kathleen Zellner?
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. We're the only filmmakers who have had a hand in, you know, getting three people out of prison in one way or another. We've done it directly. Like in the case of Cleve Heidelberg, my partner Andy Hale got him out. In A Murder in the Park, we had a hand in a guy getting out. Hate to spoil it. And in White Boy, we had a hand in him, you know, at least getting out of Michigan. We think we affected what happened a little bit. So we love changing history. We love fixing the narrative. We love seeing guys walk out of prison. I don't think anybody's walked more people out of prison than Kathleen Zellner. She's very good at what she does. And, man, I don't bet against her. She may find a way to get him out.
I was curious to ask, do you think that she was influenced into taking this case largely on seeing the documentary? Because it seems to me, and I, you know, I don't have anything disparaging to say about her either, but it just seems to me like when she first took the case, there were a lot of boisterous claims about what she was going to do and when she was going to do them, and it doesn't seem like a lot of that's been panning out.
You know, she's walked a lot of people out of prison on a lot of legitimate stuff that was wrong. You know, she was on the right side of it. I don't know if she's on the right side of this one, and she did come into it late. She came into it when it was almost too late to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I say don't count her out, but I mean, I'm not going to, I'd be guessing if I knew what her motives were. You know, it doesn't hurt to be involved with this case, and get your name out there. But I think she's doing it all pro bono. And, I think it's my understanding that you knew about this case before the documentary.
Okay.
and chose not to get involved at that point. I don't remember who told me that, so I may be wrong, but I think she knew about it, and I think that after this got big is when she said, well, I'm gonna give this a go. I believe that's the timeline. If I'm wrong, she'll tweet a correction.
Yeah, she'll be on years. You. Yeah,
right.
Well, you know, but I will say I certainly I'm entertained by Zellner and Kratz going back and forth.
they're not going to a Cubs game together.
No.
And you know, she I was trying to think where I was going with that, but at any rate, you know, she did promise a lot of stuff at the beginning. I think she's really trying for him in earnest, and I wouldn't completely bet against her.
Mm-hmm. No. There's still a lot to do, and it would be a huge challenge in the place that she's in, right? And wow, what a case!
Right.
Well, now we're going to have. I'm going to get your website and maybe one of your trailers up on our website, help promote it as well. And anything we can do to help.
That.
I mean, this is. I think this is great. I think what you do is good, and we are behind you 100%.
Well, thank you. I'll keep you posted as we go.
Yeah, please do, and let us know anything else coming up or anything that you think you want to get out there. And when you do finally release it and get it out there, let us know. We'll get this get there out to all the LA fans anyway.
Yep, I appreciate that. I look forward to it.
Well, our guest has been Sean Rett, the documentary maker, or soon to be, of Convicting a Murderer. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. See you guys.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.